You're listening to Red Setter, your guide to digital cinema, filmmaking, and cutting-edge imaging.
Hello and welcome to this week's Red Setter. I'm Mike Seymour coming to you from New Orleans, and I'm joined on the line by Jason back and in Sydney. How are you, Jace?
I am back in Sydney. How are you?
Good, good. How have you been?
I've been good, been busy. Yeah, it's been great. But finished off my Fiji job, and I just finished editing and getting all approval and happy clients on the job I shot in Melbourne. So that was good. I was the editor on that, which was a bit freaky, getting 7 hours of two-camera red footage down to 30 seconds.
You need a red rocket.
To get it down to a minute. It's just those last... It's easy to get it to down to 35 seconds, and then those last few seconds are a real killer. But no, it looks really, really good. I'm very happy, and so is the client so far. So anyway, just until the other shoe drops, I'm a happy man.
Excellent. I'm here in SIDGRAPH in New Orleans, which is, of course, a graphic show, but had some surprising camera news, but we'll get to that in 1 minute. And we'll be coming up later in the show. You've got an interview for us?
I have. I'm speaking to Jim here, who we've spoken to before, re his multicam shoots, but he's one of the first few people I know who's got a Red Rocket, so I had a quick chat with him and had a quick look at his setup and got his first impressions.
Yes, I've been playing with Red Rocket here, and of course we have one that I think has actually been delivered into our Sydney office while I've been here in America, but we'll get to that when I get home. But yeah, it's really good, so I'm looking forward to hearing your interview there. I'm sorry I'm suffering a bit from a cold this week, or rather my voice is going from him being at SIDGRAPH, but if you'll bear with us. And I must admit, Jay's been talking to a lot of people here who actually listen to Red Center. A lot of people have come up and commented on how much they enjoy it, which is good.
Excellent. Lots, but there's still lots of people staring at oscilloscopes over there, I'm sure.
It's a pretty good show for a combination of technical and creative. Of course, a lot of the papers by people like Pixar and stuff are really the peak of that, where you know, you've got a great combination of very, very solid technical and, of course, very, very creative stuff, especially in the stereoscopic field. So, no, it's been good.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, all of it is all about being creative or letting somebody be creative.
Yeah, and telling stories. So let's start with the news.
And now, the Red Setter News.
And in the news, we have Release Build 20 now actually out. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, well, it's been out as a beta build for a while, and it's been really stable, and it's been great, and been lots of reports about how nice it looks. To me, I haven't seen an awful lot of massive change personally from 20 to 18, because, you know, like 17 and 18 were so revolutionary in the way they made it look. Obviously the main thing for 20 is, apart from this advanced color matrix, which we'll get to, decreased noise in the blue channel, which I never experienced or never saw as an issue, but I'm sure, Mike, if you were looking at blue screens and green screens, you've probably experienced it.
Yeah, it has improved the signal to noise in definitely in the blue channel. Though I'm surprised you don't notice it to be such a big shift, because I actually find it's a remarkable difference. I think Rec 709 now is actually looking, well, to my eye, we've been shooting with Rec 709 here in America over red space. We've had it in the color space of red space, but we've actually had Rec 709 in terms of the gamma curve. We actually think it's looking nicer than red space right now for in terms of the gamma curve.
And okay.
It's been really a surprise at just how much that's improved. It's really great.
Right. I mean, I shot some little test footage, and I have done one. I think I did the job in Fiji on Build 20, and obviously it did look great, but I haven't really done any sort of, you know, one-to-one comparisons, really. The job, last job I did in Melbourne, because they were rental cams, they were, I think, on 18, but the footage looks, you know, great and lovely, and just looks like, to me, looks like film coming off a telecine. Really, it does.
Yeah, this just looks great.
Yeah, so no, I'm wrapped. For what I needed to do, that was perfect. Rolling with children randomly running around and you know, being kids and not wanting to be interrupted every 4 minutes by a film reload, and just wanting to be, you know, make it look natural and make it look gorgeous without having to light anything. So no, I'm wrapped with the results. There's a few other, obviously, a few other little minor fixes. One of the main ones is the sort of revised false color layout. Now, I haven't really played too much with the false color layout before. It was quite interesting to see actually, when I shot some anamorphic tests for our upcoming little short film, that was the first time I'd really played with the false color setup at all. It was quite wild, actually. First time I really experienced the setup at all.
Yeah, false colors proved to be really popular. It's improved in this build, and I like it a lot. It's something that's good to throw up on the monitor, especially when you're checking skin tones, and of course, you know, use it in concert with zebras and stuff.
So there's a few other little sort of things. There used to be an audio codec error come and go, and you occasionally get these sort of weird green flashes when you're playing back off the camera. And
it wasn't a weird flash. It was like you'd go to play it back, and the bloody clip would be green, and you'd have a mild heart attack, and then you go, no, it's fine. It's not ruined. It's actually on there. It's just not playing back.
Yeah, that's right. And it obviously caused much adrenaline around the world. So theoretically, that one's been fixed.
The other thing we've been playing with is getting the iTech data off our 18 to 50. Unfortunately, it's not available on our 18 to 85, which is a shame, nor our Cook lenses on this build. But I'm very keen to see that that metadata going into the metadata stream from the iTech stuff.
But your Cook is an iCook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but right. It's not the iTech stuff from Cook is not supported on this build.
Right, okay. Right, so the pins have been there for a long time, but right through build 18 and everything, none of this has actually been working. So this is the first build where you've seen iData come through.
Well, we're getting it on our 18 to 50 accurately, so yeah. Which is a iTech compatible red lens, and our 18 to 85 doesn't have it built in, so we can't ever expect it on that, which is a shame. And our Cook lens just isn't supporting the S4s.
Right, that's weird. You can't think it'd be the same sort of system. Anyway, there you go. Bit by bit.
Bit by bit. I've been really, really loving build 20.
Okay, well, I have to. I'm sure. Well, now it's a release build. Everyone will be shooting now. Theoretically, rental houses can now will feel quite comfortable swapping over to it. So we'll start to see it, more of that footage out in the real world. So if you've shot with it. And you're sort of have got some real world comparison to be able to say, you know, it's much better, it's much different because this or that, then yeah, give us a buzz. Okay, what's next?
We've also been shooting here with the Q-Take version 2, which I think is terrific. And just to give it a bit of a plug, we looked at it on one, and I was a bit skeptical, mainly because it just didn't have that much going for it, and it was, I thought, a little expensive at that point. I've revised my opinion on that. I think the QuickTake 2 is actually pretty good, and I'm looking to actually get one permanently for our Sydney office. It takes in two streams of HD and lets you do, for example, a test comp of a green screen, one over the other, or from a clip that's been previously saved. It's very fast, and records to ProRes if you wanted to log what was coming in off the 720p input from your camera, and I think it's really good. So
So what was the version that was at NAB then?
One. There was another version that came out, but I wasn't at NAB this year, so I didn't see the new version. I didn't get to play with it really until this week.
Okay. Oh, good. All right, well, we'll have to investigate a little bit more on that one. Okay.
And then Red Rocket is the big thing. Most people are starting to get their Red Rockets and play with them. And interestingly, while we've been talking about the real-time output performance of being able to downsize 4K to 2K, which is 4K output, one of the things that's interesting is that the guys who are working out here is going to give a plug to Digital Effects in Louisiana. They're just a terrific company. They're at Baton Rouge, and they've just got, you know, like some companies just get it. They really understand Red workflow. And Greg there is a terrific guy, and we were playing with their setup, and he was telling me that they're actually getting faster than real time. They're getting 32 frames a second when transferring DPX files out, and so they just couldn't be happier with their Red Rocket. And I must admit, I was particularly chuffed when I saw that there's a sort of a hack workaround or a clever kind of innovation, depending on your point of view, to get the Red Rocket running with a laptop that's just been tested at Red.
Yeah, so they've got a they've got an express card adapter with a sort of a custom cable going to a PCI, I guess a little sort of standalone PCI slot. And got that sort of working, basically running from a 17-inch MacBook Pro, running 2K and 4K running real time, which is, and that's actually running off the internal 7200 RPM, just the stock hard drive, so no other sort of black magic going on, really.
Well, we were running real time 4K, or rather, you know, 4K in R3D files off just a GTEC drive hanging off a machine without having to transfer them over a FireWire 800, which was pretty good.
I was pretty impressed. I was definitely pretty impressed looking at Jim's playing. Obviously, he hasn't got any sort of massive monitoring coming out. He's just using it for exporting and compression. But just to see the footage running real time and to be able to zoom right in and check the grain running real time to make sure you haven't pushed the noise or anything.
I think it's a complete deal changer. I think it's just awesome. I predicted that it was the the de-resing or the down-resing output from the Epic, and obviously it isn't. It's the DVS port, as we've since discovered from the Clipster stuff. But it really is just remarkable how fast that sucker runs and how good it is. And if you haven't looked at it, it's worth checking out. And, of course, you get Rocket Cine X, which is a really good app. It builds from what we love in Red Alert and stuff to a sort of combo Red Alert, Red Cine package. And so, again, if you haven't seen that, make sure you check it out because it really is good. And we'll be doing more on that when we get our system installed in Sydney in the coming weeks.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Okay. Next thing, there's a little bit more been coming out on the Blue Cam, or what was called the Blue Cam. These days, I think it seems to be called the CineRaw Sparta. And there's a whole bunch of clips. By the time these guys get their act together. I'm always skeptical about these things. I love the idea of the competition out there, but I just can't see. So it's going to do 60 frames a second. It's 1080p. It's got a 2/3 inch CCD. It's going to be €5,000. Is it not going to be redundant in 3-6 months or whatever when a Scarlett comes and can do 180 frames a second and is half the size of this thing and has an LCD on it and a lens built in it for $3,700 or something?
I mean, it does seem like a bit of a stepping stone between... the point of the exercise is that to take those evolutionary steps, and this does look like a halfway step between a Red one and a Scarlett, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does actually. And obviously what they're doing is they're sort of... obviously not going with a proprietary code. I think they're doing... Cinema DNG or Open Ear. I don't know. Don't ask me. It's just the director. Cinema DNG. Anyway, an open. It's a bit more open sort of codec and. But I mean, the pricing or something's going to have to give, because I can't quite sure how it's gonna fly against the Epics. Except you might be able to actually physically be able to walk up and buy one.
Well. The surprise for me here at the show was that we have another camera that was actually released here at SIDGRAPH, which is a huge surprise.
You've been Mr. Secret Squirrel about it.
Why? I don't know why you say that. I was hanging off hoping
to... You said, amazing new camera coming. Oh, my God, I'll let you know soon.
Well, I think actually what was happening was I was about to go to bed. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was just not willing to stay up and write an article that night. But I think I wrote it the next morning.
It is actually a great article on fxguide.com. There's a really good rundown on SIDGRAPH day three report on this new camera. Mike, I mean, obviously, I guess you've seen the camera.
Yeah,
itself,
so let me explain what happened. I saw it on day two, and we were hoping it was going to be running on day three, and it wasn't running on day three. So I went ahead and ran the story anyway, hoping we'd see it on day four running. The camera is by Spheron, and Spheron make HDR cameras full stop. They just make these really good cameras that are professionals. We use them on film shoots. I've used them. They're very, very high end, and they do a 360-degree scan, 360-degree, 180-degree. So you basically get a full spherical scan of a scene, and it's like an enormous file that you get out of the sucker. Now, it doesn't do multiple passes. It does it in one pass, but it does it a bit like the way a photocopier would work, in that it's scanning vertically, and it pans around. So it might take a minute or so to do a scene. And this gives you terrific data, and it has an additional benefit that if you – move the central rod up, which has a fixed kind of, like a tripod, which should have a central column that would go up and down. You move it to the full extension at the other end and do it again. Because it knows the distance between those two readings, in other words, the offset of the vertical that you just lifted it up by, it can then triangulate everything that it finds in the two images and actually do incredibly accurate survey data. So the police would use this, for example, for a crime scene. They'd pan it once, they'd get an image, they'd pan it a second time, get the second image, they'd know the stereoscopic offset, and they'd now be able to derive any distances in the scene and produce, you know, how long the skid marks were, how far the bullet casings were, etc. So this company is coming from nowhere.
So that's that system, and now they've come out with something that which
is brand new.
Although it feels extremely scientific and, you know, very high-end and very university. However, then you look at things like it's got what looks like a 35mm-sized chip, 35mm-sized sensor,
yep.
A PL mount.
Yep.
It runs 30 frames a second. There's no double passes, no sort of – it's all in one go. It'll do 20 stops dynamic range.
Yeah, now the first camera we talked about was 26 stops, so this is slightly less than that. It's 20 stops, but 20 stops is still a dramatic amount of dynamic range, and vastly more than we're seeing in any other sort of camera. So it's pretty revolutionary. Yeah. It's still at a advanced prototype stage. There's the first customer that has bought one. It's going to them and will be up and running in the next 4 to 6 weeks, and then they'll be doing testing with it and working out a whole lot of things with it and then rolling it out. I imagine it'll be fully production ready by this time next year. It may be sooner than that, but that's what I'm sort of sensing from them. And the files that come out of it are strictly full raw 32-bit files, which then go to a giant server. And at the moment, they've got massive files. They've got something there to compress that down. And the number that they're quoting for compressing it down is 100 to 1. And I've been having an argument with someone on Twitter whether that's a sensible number to compress the files down to. The trouble is we don't know how big the files are to start with, but they're definitely wanting to compress them down to produce much smaller files that you can have a look at and watch and stuff. And the other thing that needs to be able to do is display it for the DOP. So there'll be a system feeding back an image. They have some special new monitors which they've built under license from Dolby, which have got very high dynamic range themselves, much more high contrast than a normal LCD. It's a backlit LED monitor. And
under license from Dolby?
Mm-hmm. And, and so these...
They're not known for their video monitors?
No, but Dolby Labs has been doing some apparently really good research, and this is the product of that. So it's a real camera, and... I kind of laugh a bit because when we started talking about it, a few people were like quite skeptical, like, yeah, as if. And I was like, hello, wasn't that what we just did with the Red? And, you know, I'm sorry, what bit doesn't seem real? I don't think, you know, people said, oh, I can't see it happening. I'm like, well, which bit doesn't seem real? The fact that someone's advanced sensor technology or that you just haven't heard about it until now and they're doing a quiet launch?
This had to happen in some way. This had to happen soon. I mean, there's been a lot of sort of rumored sort of tech about getting, you know, with multiple sensors or multiple sensors on each photo site being able to be able to get, you know, extreme dynamic range, but nothing's really, it's all been sort of, you know, Scientific America kind of stuff really so far.
And I have it on good authority that they're actually already got 50 frames a second running in the lab, and they hope to launch but when they go into full production run, they have to have that as high as 60 frames a second. But definitely it'll be running higher than 30, and of course it also runs lower than 30 to do things like 24 and stuff. It just happens to be running at a maximum of 30 at the moment. That's pretty interesting.
They've got the camera there, but unfortunately their sort of recording unit has to be recorded separately. Is still stuck in customs, is that right?
Yeah, and they were absolutely heartbroken about it because they, you know, whole booth set up and they had the camera there and they couldn't play back the images, and every day they were kind of like, and I believe them, you know, they were really upset about it, where the packages were, and they got to Louisiana but never got to the actual booth in time for the showing. So we may be able to look at that in England in around September, and if that's the case, I'll be able to report firsthand what it looks like then.
So, I mean, now just stepping back a little bit to sort of HDR, I mean, obviously my view on HDR is you see, you know, high dynamic range pictures and people have really pushed it and it looks quite awful. I mean, I guess obviously the main plus for this is, I presume if they're going for such a cinematic camera and aiming to sort of have PL mounts and, you know, 35mm sensors, that they're looking for to provide an image that looks like film. I'm wondering what it's going to look like when it looks like film, yet you can see into highlights and you can see into shadows. And I guess obviously it's just a matter of control, and you can sort of switch that on and off. And it's a matter, just, I guess it's just the fact that you have that data there should you need it. But I guess you have the...
Well, you know, Jace, at the SMPTE conference, we had a panel of DOPs, and I actually asked them, not knowing about this camera at all, I said, if tomorrow morning you woke up and on the internet there was some kind of radical press announcement about a brand new camera, what single line in the headline would get your attention that would make you say, wow, this is something that I really care about, that you yourself would then tell friends about? And every single one of those DOP said more dynamic range, more latitude in the shots. So, yes, it doesn't have to be used. You don't have to produce... What you're referring to is tone-mapped images, and this is an aesthetic that some people just really don't like, and I completely agree with them. I think it can look ghastly, but it's no more or less the fault of the camera that you just choose to process the images in a way that is unattractive than it is if you shoot it out of focus. So in the sense that you could do that with film, right? You could take a scan of film on a telecine two or three different ways and recombine them into a tone-mapped image and produce something that you didn't like. But the point is, if you did shoot with this camera, you would have enormous ability to regrade stuff dynamically and a lot of latitude to move it, not just like a stop or two, but many stops higher or lower depending on what was going on with the action.
Stocks dive in everybody who manufactures light meters.
Yeah, I actually asked them about that. I said, so what is it rated at? I mean, is there an ISO or whatever? And they said, what we do at the moment is we point at an 18% grey card and we just put that in the middle of the and have 10 stops latitude above and 10 below. And we just call it quits. And I was like, okay, what do we do
just
about it?
Point it at the grayscale at the beginning, grayscale at the end of the beginning of the day and then just walk away, I guess. Just probably just do that at the beginning of the day, like setting some sort of black level and then just shoot for the whole day, never touching the stop and... Yeah.
But of course, the aperture is still going to affect the depth of field and stuff. So
sure. Just keep it wide open. A few NDs in front.
There you go.
Gorgeous. There you're done. You're done. Well, that'll be obviously it'll be very interesting. It'd be great if they can. I mean, I guess so. The exhibition part of the show is done, and the rest is how does it work? Because then they will not get a chance to show this.
They will not get a chance to show it now. The next place is IBC, I presume.
Right.
It's a German company. And as I said, the first client or the first customer is British, and they'll be doing tests with it starting in September.
Excellent. I think we need to speak to them.
Well, we will. And in fact, I offered to talk to them, and they were like, on the record and in film, and they were like, no, we don't want to do it yet. In fact, somebody jokingly said at the side of the booth, wow, this is a really different attitude to Red. You guys just don't want any publicity. And they were like, well, you know, we just want to get it all working properly and just signal that it's coming, and when it's fully production ready, we'll release it. So,
however, if you work or study at the University of Warwick, please give us a call.
So, yeah, that's happening. And other news on this, apparently some new CF cards coming. Is that what I've heard?
Yeah. It's just rumoured a couple, or not rumoured. Jim mentioned a couple of days ago that there are 30, because there was a batch of sort of third-party CF cards, higher capacity, come out from third parties. And so Jim sort of piped up and said, look, basically, you know, 32 gigs are on the cards. We are... working on it, and they should be out very shortly. We're just sort of internal testing now. They've got a few test samples, and we'll hopefully be rolling those out soon. I'm seeing a bit of a move back to cards now. They're getting bigger. What I like about the idea of it, and well, I've done a great interview with Brooke Willard, excellent DIT in the States, and we'll roll that interview out in the next episode or so. But he talks at depth about the how practical and how much safer, you know, from a sort of gotcha point of view, the CF cards are. I mean, obviously they're the fastest, they're faster than the drives, or faster than the hard drives. They sort of take away a lot of the bulk of the camera. You're not using the extra.
Well, they haven't been faster than the drives up until now, because we've been able to get faster frame rates actually. On the hard drives, and the Red can't run as fast in terms of frame rates onto the CF cards as to the hard drives.
I thought the 16 gigs cards, it can get you better, slightly better frame rates, or the same frame rates as the hard drive. Yeah, maybe not.
That's true. I'm quoting from the 8 gigs. You're right.
Right. But obviously it takes away weight from the camera and bulk from the camera, extra cables, which is obviously then extra points of failure, the extra battery usage. You know, you're going to rip through your battery a lot faster if it's powering a drive. And as I say, when we get to the Brooke Willard interview, the whole idea of maybe a move back to CF cards makes sense. Yeah, obviously the added weight on the camera and the drives don't like vibration that much. It's just it's just a safer way to work, I think.
You have 16 like minutes, I agree. 16 minutes is a hell of a lot of cards.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And you can always
So I think when those things roll out, that'll be an interesting sort of shift to, you know, maybe away from drives to something more manageable. Now, the rolling shutter has obviously been an issue with a lot of cameras and still continues as we start to move slowly into DSLR land where no one seems to quite be able to get it right yet. The Foundry have launched a plugin to somewhat get rid of it, Mike.
Yes, in fact, I suggested that they do it. And when I was in London a while ago to Simon, and we gave them test footage and stuff. And it basically calibrates itself on the rolling shutter that it's experiencing from the footage, wherever that is coming from, whether it's DLSR or RED or whatever. And then it removes it. And it's an interesting problem because it's not just a skewing problem, because something closer to camera that's moving faster is going to skew a lot more than something in the same shot further back that's not moving across the frame as fast. So you can't just take it out. And also, it's a temporal problem. It's a problem that's changing over time. So you actually want certain things in the scene to sort of remain vertical, certain things to be adjusted over time. And the Foundry's produced this plugin called Rolling Shutter. It works pretty well, actually. It runs for in Nuke and in After Effects. It's about $500. And in fact, we have it in FX PhD. It's actually cheaper to join FX PhD than it is to go buy the shutter, buy the plugin. But it's, yes, and we also have Victor's been doing testing work with it in PhD. And it was some of his material that was used at the launch here at SIDGRAPH where they launched it. And I think it's remarkably good. I'm really impressed. Of course, it allows 3D tracking programs to much more easily solve problems and just aesthetically remove something that's pretty ugly in some footage.
It must be pretty hard. It must be some pretty serious math to be able to get it right, to be able to remove rolling shutter from something in foreground, say, where the background behind it or next to it is not exhibiting any skewing.
Yeah, it's very much the same problem that you would have in retiming a shot. If you're trying to retime and do a slow-mo shot, it has to work out what objects are moving and adjust them between frames. So it does that, do an analysis over multiple frames and solve accordingly. But it's great. It's really good. I'm really just think the Foundry deserved total points for having spent the time to implement it. It took about I think I was talking to Simon today about it because I was doing a talk with him where we showed it at SIDGRAPH. And I think it took him 2 months to develop, and then it took them about 4 to 6 months to actually commercialize it into a product and bring it to market and test it thoroughly and stuff.
Excellent. Now, also, just quickly, in movie news, The Book of Eli, there's a trailer being released finally. I don't think the movie's actually out till early next year, till January 10. But the trailer looks fantastic. I mean, it looks like an awful lot of, I can only presume it looks like an awful lot of green screen, but some fantastic compositing of some brilliant, you know, beautifully done backgrounds or matte paintings. I can only guess. But it just, you know, imagery looks brilliant. This is, do you know much about the film, Mike?
Look, I don't, other than it's been a lot of talk, looking forward to it coming out. I don't think it's, you said, is it out next year, is that right?
January 10.
Great, yeah. So no, I haven't seen it. I look forward to looking at that trailer.
Yeah, it's one of those. Obviously, I guess an A-list picture that has been anticipated. Denzel Washington and Gary Oldman, and so it's definitely, you know, it will be into the mainstream, I guess, like Knowing. So it should be interesting to see it again. The trailer's anything to judge by, the movie should be awesome.
Well, now let's cross to the Red Room, where you spoke to Jim Hare, who, as you said earlier in the show, we've actually spoken to before, is a terrific guy, does great work. And he's one of those that, like the guys at Digital FX that I was talking to yesterday, actually have their Red Rocket and are using it in production.
Absolutely. Working with 90-minute takes from five cameras is really going to eat your life away without some help. After we hear from Mr. Hare, I also spoke to Jim Godaldic and Pliny from Off Hollywood, who have also just received their card and are about to integrate it into their DI suite. Two great guys with plenty to say about what this card means to them. But before we hear from them, let's hear from Jim Hare. So thanks, Jim, for having a chat again.
Yeah, happy to be here.
It's funny how a new graphics card can suddenly turn into unboxing porn or an excuse to have people over.
Absolutely, and it's interesting with the Rocket that the box itself has had such an impact as the graphics are lovely. But yeah, something that you don't see that you hide in the computer has just had such an uproar, and yeah, people steamed over to see it. It's amazing.
So first of all, getting it into the machine, what machine have you got and how easy was it to fit?
Sure. Well, I actually have the very first Mac Pro that ever came out. So first generation quad core. Basically, you cannot get slower machine than the one I put it in. And it was great. It just slipped right in. It's a bit challenging if you're already full up. Like I already had a RAID card. I already had a Blackmagic card. Luckily, I had a slot free, so I just popped it in there to see how it would work. And it was just so easy. It just went in first time, installed the software, and then 5 minutes later, I was watching fully debugged 4K in real time. It was amazing.
You're not hooking it up to any external monitor. You're purely using it for acceleration then.
That's right. That's something I do want to hook it up in the future to monitoring. The monitoring actually only came online this morning in the new build. Before that, we were only using acceleration. But yes, at the moment, I'm mostly interested in the acceleration to transcoding and also the real-time grading. The biggest thing I found frustrating about working in Red Alert, while I could basically be working on a still or very slow motion, I could never see what the noise was going to do. What's the noise pattern going to be until I transcoded? And since my files were 90 minutes long, I might be waiting 18, 20 hours just to see what the noise looks like here and there. So just being able to see that in real time now is very exciting for me. And then transcoding basically in real time. So instead of waiting, you know, I used to wait 3 or 4 days across 2 Mac Pros to get my footage. I can basically do the same thing in 6 or 7 hours now.
Just recap for people who may not have heard the last interview I did with you, why this is, well, theoretically, work really well for you.
Absolutely. Well, I work in live concert filming. So I will take 5, 6, 7 cameras, single take across a 90-minute show, come back and transcode all cameras to ProRes, and then from there work in a ProRes environment. So when I would get back from the show, I would split my R3Ds across 2 Mac Pro computers and essentially transcode out of Red Rushes. Now, each 90-minute take might take as long as 18 hours to process. So once you have kind of 6 cameras doing that, that's where days and days come into it. So now, being able to get 90 minutes out in 90 minutes, plus have a much better idea of how my transcoded footage will look because I've seen it. And another thing is I used to transcode it half debayer at a high level. Now I can do everything at 4K full debayer. And so it's going to look better and happen just 1,000 times quicker. For what I do, since I'm typically working in somewhat low light or challenging lighting conditions, noise has always been, I've always been one step ahead of the noise. Now, the debayer level in many ways determines how much noise you will get in your footage. Half high gives a clean image, but oh, I can still see noise in the shadows. When I go to a fully debayer, it often gets rid of that. So for me, it's about that. And also, I'm sure Graham could give a better explanation, but there's something very silky. That's the word I would say for a full debayer compared to a half high.
And what's been preventing people and yourself from going that full level is just through the roof processing time.
Through the roof processing time. I ran one camera through when I was out on tour. I said, look, I'm going to be gone for a week. I'll just see how long it would take. I think it took 60 or 70 hours.
How long was that take then? That
For about 90 minutes.
Right.
Just not even close to reasonable as far as trying to work to a deadline. Even half high, like I said, 2 computers would take the better part of a week.
So obviously the idea would be then you can see exactly what it's going to be like before you do an 18-hour render and work out, oh, well, perhaps I've got too much noise, I should have backed something off, or I should have gone to the next setting of debayering.
Absolutely, or did I push the curves too hard? So just being able to see it and go through, just dot through a show and say, okay, yes, that still works, this is a good setting for me. That's fantastic. And then just the cutting down the time of transcoding to real time.
Part of the magic of this card is working with Rocket Cine X. Probably haven't had much chance to play with it, but just take us through how it's sort of differing from some of the other apps.
Sure. Well, Rocket Cine X, which is in its infancy, absolutely. I mean, the few people who have Rocket cards at the moment, we are essentially alpha and beta testing it. And so new features are coming online daily. I would say at the moment, it's probably most akin to Red Alert. We have really those basic curves and color correction, exposure, color space tools that we're used to. It's really Red Alert-ish. But the differences are we have a little rocket icon in the bottom right, which allows us to essentially deal with that external monitoring, anything from 720 up to 4K monitoring. And that's something I want to set up with maybe 4 DVI monitors if I possibly can to get a pseudo 4K monitor out of it. Beyond that, we have a render section which allows us to set up essentially our export settings. Do you want DPX, QuickTime, etc.? And a nice looks area which allows us to save looks. So if you use the same thing, I just want to put a bit of an S-curve, put it to red space, you know, bump up saturation a bit, you can reuse looks, which is very nice and very handy.
So it's like if you were going into a data grading suite, you can open up a clip, play it in real time, see the grade applied to it, zoom in even, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Then some really neat things with the scroll wheel. You can actually zoom right into your footage as it's playing, check focus, see what the noise is doing. And another really neat thing that they put in is the ability to start an export and then keep grading the next clip. So as you export, you're actually preparing your next clip. You're not locked out of your system like we were before.
Right, so it's doing background exporting.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's using the card twice to debay your footage, what you're looking at, and it doesn't seem to steal performance from what I've seen. It doesn't slow it down at all. In the end, it is just a card that you stick in the computer and can forget about. For me, I think it's an interesting milestone for Red in the sense that Red, this has probably been the last thing that separates Red from the rest of the video and film world, is that real-time processing. When we all got Red, we accepted the fact that we could no longer be in real time. Everything's going to take time to process and slow us down. This is the first step across that barrier into real time. And for me, that's very exciting. And so, I'm very enthusiastic about it. And I have two live shows this week, so I'm going to come back with another 10 or 15 hours of R3Ds. And this will be the first time where I can just pump them through and don't have to wait a week to edit. I'm very excited.
Well, let's catch up on the other side of those shows when you've had a bit more real time with it, and see how that goes. In the meantime, where can people find you?
You can find me on Red User at Jim Hare. It's all one word, J-I-M-H-A-R-E.
Twitter?
No Twitter. I'm twitless. I basically hide from the world except for Red User, and that's where I live.
Great. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Jason.
Okay, I'm speaking to Jim Godaldic and Pliny from Off Hollywood. Thanks, guys, for taking the time.
Thanks for having us.
Excellent. Just sort of intro your positions there at Off Hollywood and what sort of work you're doing, and then we'll get on to Red Rocket.
Sure. Go ahead, Jim.
I guess it's senior DI artist.
Jim's a jack of all trades, so we had to figure out something to put on his business card. I've been trying to figure that out for the last 5.5 years myself. I think currently my email footer says partner/COO, so there you go. I'm a partner/COO.
Excellent. Obviously, we're talking Red Rocket. What's the setup it's put into, and how hard was it to fit it?
It's in a Mac Pro 4th gen, so it's the latest i7 Mac Pro. It's actually running on the slower iteration, the 226. No, the installation was as easy as opening it up and popping in a PCIe card.
So at the moment, just really early days in the testing, but give us your impression so far.
It's pretty amazing to actually load in 4K footage, load in the R3Ds, just grab a folder and have your R3Ds show up in your clip list and be able to just play it back. And have it play back in real time is pretty cool.
What is the plan for grading output or?
Yeah, all the above. DI, Scratch, Assimilate Scratch is planning on supporting it. So that will go in all of our Scratch workstations. and of course for doing dailies and things of the sort. Dailies a big part of what we do on a daily basis, and this will of course help us speed that up. A lot of clients approach the Red workflow like film workflow, because it, in many ways it is like a 35 millimeter workflow, but in their heads they see us at a Telecity session hitting play and watching the footage back in real time, and it's sort of hard to sometimes explain it. No, it's a computer crunching numbers at, you know, 3 frames, 4 frames, 8 frames a second, whatever you're getting. So this sort of helps us come take everything back into the Telecine metaphor that that clients are already sort of picturing in their heads.
So what's the current DI workflow at the moment then?
That's a bit of a loaded question. No DI, no two DIs are the same. But our main color tool is Assimilate Scratch, of which we have two seats right now. That's what we do all of our red color grading on. We also have a DVS Clipster 3, which also happens to play back red code 4K in real time. And that's used for, it's really sort of the Swiss Army knife in our DI. So ingesting from tape. It can also be used for playing out dailies. It goes out to MXF for Avid workflows very nicely, so we can use it for making dailies. And also for final mastering and output. You can do DCPs, you can play out to SR tape, whatever you need. So right now we're looking at real-time and color grading real-time for outputs, real-time for dailies, which is what we've been dreaming of since we got our cameras 2 years ago.
Currently nothing at the moment you're real-time at all with anything you've got.
Not at 4K debayer. You can do very nice grading 2K with current workstations. There is, however, a huge advantage to having a 4K debayer versus a 2K debayer, even if what you're actually playing out is only to a 1080 projector or a 2K projector. You will see a lot less noise in certain dark areas in the frame and in the blue channel, and it's really useful for a DP to be able to actually see what he's getting, because he might be, if he's looking at a 2K debayer of an image, he might be looking at a noisier image than what he's actually going to get, because his final output will be 4K regardless. Even if, you know, it's 2007 and you're rendering 1K at 1 frame a second, I remember those days, we're still going to finish a feature or any project at 4K debayer no matter how long it takes to output. But if he can actually see that 4K debayer while he's grading in the session, you don't have to stop and say, okay, toggle to 4K, okay, toggle back to 2K, hit play. If he could just always have the 4K debayer in front of him, he sees exactly what he's getting.
Right.
And that's huge for the DP or whatever client is in the color suite.
So the 4K debayer works even though that your actual final output will be probably 2K.
It will be a 4K debayer scaled down to 2K.
So obviously you're testing it at the moment. I suppose even though the card is out there and it's retail and you can order it, like the Red One in its earlier days, everyone who's got the cards is still sort of taking it on board that they are essentially being a beta site.
Dean and Rob and the guys at Red have been really responsive to, I'm sure, not only my requests and other people's requests, but I talked to Dean through email and exchange and say, you know, do you think we can get similar I/O controls, keyboard shortcuts, a bunch of, I've sent him email long list of features, and not once has he said like no or we can't do that. I mean, it's pretty cool that the test box that we have right now is pretty much going right off of our internal RAID that we have set up, and we're getting pretty fast speeds just from like as early as this card and software is. It's pretty remarkable.
So, and then I guess when you put it in the Scratch Tower, that'll be a whole new ball game.
That'll be my day, right? That'll make my day when the Scratch box is just...
Is there a timeline for that? Do we know?
That all depends on the third-party developers, but the Assimilate guys, they've been on top of this from day one, so I expect them to turn it around pretty quickly. You hear that, guys?
So where can people find out more and where can they reach you guys?
You can find us on the web at offhollywoodny.com. You can find me on Twitter at filmbot and my blog finalcutuser.com.
And I'm on Twitter as well. I am Pliny, I-A-M-P-L-I-N-Y.
Again, thanks, guys, for taking the time. I really appreciate it. It's just kind of bizarre, the sort of interest. I've never seen unboxing porn and beer parties or whatever for a graphics card.
Yeah, but if you ever had to sit around and watch something render at 0.7 frames a second, man, that's worth a beer.
Yeah, I was,
going home at night to your family factor is, yeah, that's what it is.
They should rename it the get home and see your kids card.
Yep.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. And let's catch up when we're a bit further down the track.
Cool. Sounds good.
Excellent. Real pleasure. And thanks for having us.
Cheers.
Well, thanks so much for doing that, Jace. And I should say the thing about Red Rocket, if you are looking at it, it's pretty competitively priced. I've got to say, I can't imagine Red is making almost any money on this. If you were looking at comparable kind of systems in other boxes and stuff, they're in the tens of thousands of dollars. So possibly they're just doing it because it really does help the workflow of the Red camera enormously. And I can't imagine people not integrating this. When the SDK comes out, it'll be integrated into, I reckon, a ton of products.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, when you look at, particularly with Jim's examples there, you know, render times going down from 18 hours down to, you know, like an hour or so, you know, being slashed, it's not hard to find the, you know, the economy in that to be able to, you know, make sense to spend the money if it's, you know, time being money. It's, so, well, I mean, what is it, like $5,000 card?
Yeah, and it's, it really is... I reckon a complete game changer. I think we're going to see that it's going to have massive applications right across the board. And I think this is going to appeal like the sort of the dark ages of Red when we were having to transfer stuff using Red Rushes or even, you know, Red Alert.
And obviously, you know, as you say, it's very hard to sort of really see the artifacts and the moving artifacts or to see how far you've pushed that footage until you've rendered it out. So it's that annoying thing of having to render and check and then adjust and render and check it. So, you know, the ability to really, what at Jim's place, you know, as I say in the interview, it really is like, it's like for me, it was like as a director sitting in a DI suite or sitting in a data grading suite to be able to see the footage, you know, rolling in real time. You know, you can have it on a plasma, and then they can actually be grading it as you go, just to see the proper footage. You know, and rather than just sort of still frames and then a render, it's just a real step. And really, I think it really pushed. It makes it very easy for someone to then, you know, get a grading surface. Obviously, you have to know what you're doing. You know, it's just because you can doesn't mean you should. You know, get a grading surface and a proper plasma and monitor. And you could really set yourself up as to be able to do your edit and then also sort of maybe move in and do an edit and look, you know, really professional.
Look, it's just brilliant box for doing rushes. I mean, if the client wants a DVD of what we shot today, just run it out in real time. I mean, it's exceptionally good. Well, look, I'm going to go because, as you can tell, my voice is about to completely collapse after a week of talking. I can barely speak. But it's been good talking to you, Jace.
Thanks, mate. So you're there for another week?
Yeah, next week. Actually, I'm going down to spend a day at Red, which should be very good. So, but yes, I'll be shooting in LA next week and then visiting our friends down at Red. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Please keep the questions coming. Keep posting stuff on Twitter where Jason is available as...
Wingrove, and you are Mike Seymour.
And
any emails or comments or any info, please, red@fxguide.com.
And we really do appreciate getting your stuff. And we really, sincerely mean it. We really love the fact people coming up to us and saying they listen to the show. Somebody actually described you as the calmer of the two, which I thought was particularly funny. But yes, whatever, I can take that. But until next time, see you guys. Thanks so much for listening.
See you.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2009, FX Guide, LLC.